much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is a Friday afternoon, 10 minutes after 12 on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks very much for tuning in. I hope you'll follow me on Twitter at Steve Bertrand or on Facebook as Steve Bertrand or Steve Bertrand on Books, Steve Bertrand Travel, you pick. Andrea Haynes is the only person I know with more handles than that. She is the editor of Blue Sky Innovation Tribune, and she joins us now. Andrea, welcome.
Thank you, Steve.
So we're going to talk later about there's an investing, social responsibility investing sort of session or symposium coming to Chicago a little bit later this month. And the idea that millennials, more than any other group, are driven by socially responsible investing. Does that make sense to you?
It does. They, you know, certainly in like their job hunting and a lot of aspects of their lives, they seem to be very interested in making a difference as well as making a living.
And the least interested, you think, which group?
I'm going to say boomers because I'm definitely not going to say Gen X.
No, it's actually beyond the boomers. The older you are, the greatest generation. The older you are, the less likely you are. So boomers are just beyond that, and then comes Gen X and millennials. So we'll kick that around, but that's not why Andrea is here. She's here to talk about what's in Blue Sky Innovation in the Tribune. And, what's the phrase? Is the sincerest form of flattery copying? What's the phrase?
Yes, imitation.
Imitation.
It's
thank
the
you.
Sincerest form of flattery, I think.
The vocabulary will come soon. And we talk a lot about Cards Against Humanity, company, local company. They've done phenomenally well. And it only figures that people are going to start trying to rip them off, right? And Donald Trump, what a target.
Yeah, so there have been some imitators, knockoffs, whatever you want to call it, companies that are creating cards related to Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton, the coming election, so that you can kind of make all your little fun, nasty sentences using names of presidential candidates.
Are they is Cards Against Humanity going after them? Right. I think the biggest one you guys write about, they've gotten 30,000 orders or something, but they're not selling them
yet?
Yeah,
they're sort of doing it as more of a promotional thing so far. They haven't actually marketed the card commercially, although they're tempted to, I think, because they've gotten something like 30,000 requests for the version that they've made. There's another company that briefly did a Kickstarter. They're involved with some back and forth with Cards Against Humanity. So, you know, in some cases, it seems like just normal kind of little add-ons. In
right.
other cases, Cards is pushing back.
Well, I like that one of the businessmen, actually businesswoman, Denise Hawkins, says it's not about bashing Trump. It's really about having a good laugh, laughing with Trump.
Maybe.
No way. It's about bashing Donald Trump. So we'll follow that because it's interesting for me to see how Cards Against Humanity, because they're pretty irreverent, do some great things in town. But see how they fight back against that.
Yeah, it's a great game. And there's no guiltier feeling than winning at Cards Against Humanity, let me tell you.
I think I was telling you, we bought it for our kids for Christmas. And your eyes
lit up. These are grown
like,
kids.
What? They're grown kids. But I don't think we've played it yet. Maybe my daughter brought it to college.
Yeah, it's kind of, you probably know, but the worst things you can come up with really are what win you the points.
Well, give me an example.
So I don't know if I can give you an example on the air, but they tend to be really things that push the boundaries of what we might consider acceptable dialogue.
We talked in this segment a while ago about how the Illinois Institute of Technology they're going to sort of rebrand as Illinois Tech, right?
Yep.
And now they're moving toward a weekend MBA session, which is in the West Loop. Explain that for me.
Yeah, so they offer a normal sort of traditional MBA, but they're offering now an accelerated program that meets only on Saturdays. So it's designed, you know, obviously for people that are keeping their Monday through Friday jobs. And they're giving it an innovation focus. They're partnering with the Chicago Innovation Awards to add a little bit of that sort of innovation and entrepreneurship kind of content. And, you know, they're getting a membership in the Innovation Awards and some incentive to hopefully stick around in Chicago and build businesses here.
Yeah, and it's the geography, I think, is key, too. They're going to be in the West Loop. It looks like in that Innovation District.
Yep. They're on Adams Street, so it's the nearer campus.
So if I wanted to get an MBA on Saturdays, what would it cost me?
$50,000.
$50,000?
You know, it's kind of the going rate for,
really?
I would say, that type of program. I mean, if you look at the booths and the Kellogg's, they're more in the neighborhood of $150. So $50 is probably more of a mid-range price, actually, for an MBA.
Well, I like one of the things they're doing, too, is they're getting involved in this Innovation Awards idea with the idea that it might anchor them a little bit to the area.
Yeah, it's an interesting partnership. And I think that, you know, some of that networking piece of it, you could imagine that being powerful.
Right. And so the idea is if they score here, they get a job here, that we're not going to be training people to go out and work somewhere else.
Exactly.
On innovation.
Keeping some of that talent in Chicago.
I mentioned Cards Against Humanity. Another company, a local company that we talk about a lot, is Groupon. And I feel like we're kicking them half the time. and maybe they don't always deserve it, but more layoffs coming at Groupon.
Yeah, they laid off 30 people yesterday, which is definitely not a huge number, but people are always interested in what's happening at Groupon. And they announced a much bigger layoff, 1,100 people last fall. So, of course, we were curious about how that might impact Chicago. And, you know, that really wasn't Chicago-focused, was not focused on the headquarters. The majority of those jobs are countries they're pulling out of and just other things. But we just to follow up on that, there were 30 in Chicago. Most of those were in Chicago
yesterday. Surprised that they have 10,000 employees.
It's a lot. It's just under 10,000. That's globally.
Right. What do they do? Are these people going out trying to solicit companies?
Yeah.
Or?
Yep. A lot of them are in, you know, sales, basically, working with merchants that run deals. And then, you know, the layoffs yesterday affected customer service.
Right. And so about 30, so not a huge thing. But
unless you're one of the 30, right?
Yeah. And it's not like they're adding jobs, though, either. And they've got a new CFO that might be part of this.
Brand new CFO. You know, these cuts had been previously announced, so won't hang them on him. But they did also, while announcing their earnings a week or so ago, name a new CFO.
And
so
what will that mean for the company?
You know, what anything means for Groupon, it takes a guess. Yeah. They had someone in an interim role, so now they've got a permanent person in there.
Why do you think it is that we're so obsessed with Groupon here?
It just was such a dramatic story. You know, they just came onto the scene. Everybody was using Groupons. It was consumer-facing enough that we all use them, so everyone's familiar with it. They've had such highs, such lows. Things have moved so fast. It just seems like a very compelling story for people.
Yeah, I guess that's it. We were sort of along for the ride with them because they were the first big thing that we could play with, too.
Yeah.
In reading about it.
And, yeah, big for Chicago's tech identity, really.
Good or bad? Mostly good.
Yeah.
Let's go to TV. There's a series on TBS called America's Greatest Makers. And there's a Chicago team doing pretty well there, right?
There is. It's called Newton.
Newton, N-W-T-N.
N-W-T-N, which I was joking. I like a company that starts with its stock symbol already chosen.
Right.
Seems very optimistic. But no, they pronounce it Newton. And they are part of this show that's using Intel tiny little computers, basically, to make wearable devices or things that you can use in tiny form. So they're doing a concussion detection device that athletes can wear.
It's amazing to me that there's a TV show on a major network that is about innovation when it comes not to just innovation, but wearables. It's got to be wearables.
Yeah. Yep. It's pretty specific. And it is kind of an outgrowth of the Shark Tanks and all those kind of things. But this is letting you see them really refine the product. These aren't necessarily finished products that they're pitching. They're actually working on the product as the show moves along.
Yeah. Mark Burnett's show, right?
Exactly.
Came up with Shark Tank.
Shark Tank, Survivor.
So I like this idea. It detects concussions, but not just that there was a concussion, but wear in the head.
Yeah.
Which is a step up from a lot of it.
Yeah. But effort to sort of better monitor and better alert coaches and others to when athletes might be in danger.
That's Newton, and the show is America's Greatest Makers. The final is later this month, May 24th, so you can watch that. Andrea Haines, nice to see you. Have a good weekend.
You too, Steve. Thanks.
You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Let's go. It's The Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Tom Gimbel from the LaSalle Network is in the studio. Tom, welcome back to The Business Lunch.
Always good to be here. Thanks for having me.
So we're going to talk about the Malia Obama taking a gap year, and she's going to go to Harvard.
Yeah, it's always a tough decision whether you should go to Harvard right away or if you should delay that.
Well, I asked, do you think really that her husband or her dad being president helped her get into Harvard?
I don't think so. I'm sure it was. They had their eyes with a blindfold on when they reviewed the application.
You know, I think most seniors in college or juniors in college, when it comes time to approach living in the real world, they start to think about graduate school.
Yeah, right.
And so, and a lot of maybe high school kids when it comes to maybe going, although is a gap year is typically after high school, not college.
Yeah, it's after high school.
Do you think it's a good idea or a bad idea?
I think it really depends on the situation. You know, there's probably two areas that it makes a lot of sense with. And that is the kid who's not sure they want to go to college, right? Which isn't this case. And then there's the person that has all the options in the world, which is this case.
Right.
And maybe it's more of a grounding experience. I've seen it a lot with kids who have their heart set on a certain school, right? They early admission, they don't get in, and they're really strong academically. They take the gap year to kind of get their bearings again and go. But it's really, I hate to say it, but it's kind of, it tends to be more of a rich person's problem when you talk about
gap years. Well, sure it is because, right? You know, a lot of people don't have the luxury of taking a year off.
Right. I mean, I have heard where people will do it to save up money for college. They'll take a gap year.
They'll get a job.
They'll get a reality check to go do it. But no one's writing about those kids, right? They're writing about the kid that gets into Harvard that delays it for a year.
One of the things I like about the gap year idea is that we've fallen into this notion. I do especially. I mean, I'm guilty of this. This is how you do it. You go to high school, then, you know, because you got to get started. You got to get into the workforce.
Well, I know what my dad would have said 20 years ago if I wanted to take a gap year.
Sure, anything
he
would have
said, yeah, where you live in one doing that, right?
But so the idea is, well, you've got to get into the workforce as soon as you can. And that's not really always a healthy way of thinking.
No, I think it has changed quite a bit. When people took a year off, you know, you talked about a gap year after college or before graduate. When people took a gap year after college before going into the workforce, we call them screw-offs.
Yeah, right. Right.
Now it's like, okay, so, you know, you need to go and build houses for Habitat for Humanity, or you do these other things. And it's a lot more acceptable today. Maybe it's the remote workforce. Maybe it's being able to work anywhere in the world. Maybe it's the global economy. You're competing against people from all over. But I will say, there's something about people that have gone and done something different, whether they've done a semester abroad, whether they've done a charitable endeavor living in a foreign country. But there's something about their adaptability to the workforce that I do find a positive.
Right. Well, they've broadened themselves in a way, right?
No, they've learned how to interact in different situations. I mean, think about it. You go to a high school, you graduate, you go to around here, especially Big Ten colleges and Notre Dame, or you go to big school, you're with the same types of people you grew up with, there's not a lot of diversity, and then you come out and you have this degree and you call up, you know, your friend's parents, dad who's a lawyer, can you introduce me to this? And it's kind of basic stuff.
Well, what you're talking about in a way is taking a year for further resume building.
Yeah, from
and not a everyone different does perspective. It that way, right?
Yeah, to really look and say, I've broadened how I view, I mean, I would, if I were now 22 years old or 23, I guess, and I'd taken a gap year to talk about that in an interview and a cover letter, and to say, I really, my whole thought process changed from 18 to 19 as I was spending this year doing X, Y, and Z.
Right.
And that's a game changer.
Yeah, and maybe it is for pampered or for the rich, but I think there is a little courage involved too, because you are getting off that treadmill.
Well, I think even more so, and sometimes you crystallize things as you're talking about it, which I'm doing now, and you think about kids. Now they're not with their friends anymore. And then when they go back, their friends graduate a year before they do. So it really does change it. Now all of a sudden you're with kids when you're a freshman that you're really supposed to be a sophomore.
And a year difference is a big year at that age.
Oh, it's 1/18.
Right.
It's a lot.
It's almost 5%.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tom Gimbel, all right, thanks for coming by.
Thanks for having me. Have a great weekend.
Big weekend ahead for you?
No, usual stuff, right? Cheer for the Cubs and
see the kids.
Maybe
out planting your garden. And,
I think I'm going to do some yard work and hang out with the kids.
All right, nice to see you.
Take care.
You're listening to the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thank you, Kim Gordon. 12:36. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. Steve Bertrand in on this Friday afternoon. John Carruthers is here as well. He's the founder of ManBQ. John, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
So I guess you've been on with other shows overnight, things like that. Yeah,
the Graveyarders.
It's my first time to meet you. And so I'm looking at this and I'm trying to figure out how a guy turns a backyard grill party into a successful business. Well, you seem to have done that.
Well, it's blind luck. I mean, isn't that all the best success stories?
Maybe it is. Tell me about it. What is ManBQ?
So ManBQ is something we started in 2006, actually. And it used to be just a bunch of us decided we needed to get together once a month because everyone was having kids or moving to the suburbs or getting, you know, new jobs and putting in big hours.
Right.
So we had a barbecue that was pretty fun. And, you know, like you do when you've had several beers over the course of an evening, you're like, we should do this every month. This is the greatest.
Great. This is a wonderful idea.
This is the one time in recorded history that's panned out. So we started, you know, bringing friends, and friends brought other friends, and we actually couldn't cook at first. But then people got competitive.
You mean you couldn't cook like you just wasn't a skill?
I mean, we were lighting those boxed burgers from Walmart on fire, man. Craft beer wasn't as big a thing. I mean, you know, we were just drinking our soil and eating our charred meat.
Right.
It was all fun. Along the way, we got real competitive with each other like guys do, and, you know, people started bringing friends who were chefs and up in the game and stuff like that. So, yeah, we've been doing it every month since then, you know, like January, February.
You're out there every month.
August. Yeah.
Is it open for other people to join you?
Yeah, we've got a Facebook group called, ManBQ. we put out our event invites and everything. Started as a guys only thing, and we still do some of our events as, you know, the guys night kind of thing. You know, girls have their night outs. Our feet all look terrible, so we can't go get pedicures.
No, you can't do that.
So
you wouldn't want to do that,
yeah.
No.
But yeah, we do a lot of co-ed things. We do our monthly thing. It's called Meetings. That's M-E-A-T for the radio listeners.
Very clever. Who's your creative guy? Is that you?
We're all the creative guy. Right. Me, my partners, Jesse Valenciana and John Scholl. We all sort of spitball this as we go.
Okay, so I can see this little social thing, and you're competing with each other about who can grill the nicest brat or steak or creative recipe. How does it, and then you're on TV? Is that what happened?
Yeah, we got, you know, we looked into a spot on Chicago's Best, you know, here on Channel 9 a couple times. The Today Show called out of the blue once. That's actually how we got hooked
just
up with
just because of the social club aspect of it.
It's, you know, if you bring enough friends and they bring enough friends, one of them is going to be an important person eventually, and you just have to make sure they eat well.
And so then you're on the Today Show, and you get the attention of a book editor or publisher?
It wasn't even that. It was our second Chicago's Best segment. And the agent who found us was actually, she's local, but she's been in Boston for, you know, 30 years
right.
or something. And she was turning on WGN as, you know, sort of background noise before she hops in the shower. Well, lo and behold, before, you know, she can kind of turn away, it's our segment on, and we're yelling at the camera and spilling beer on each other. And she goes, I think I could sell this. And, you know, God bless her for it. She just called us the next Monday, and she's like, have you thought about being represented? And we're like, I don't.
Have I been charged? Wait, I haven't been charged yet, have I?
To be honest, I haven't thought of it.
So she's representing you and Jacques Pepin.
And Rick Bayless is who she was in town for.
Wow.
So she clearly runs the whole gamut of garbage food to fine French dining.
And so that led to the first cookbook. There are two
mm-hmm.
cookbooks out now.
Two cookbooks, yeah. The first one is called just Barbecue, Meat, Beer, Rock and Roll. And that was all grilling, smoking, everything over the open fire. The new one, which I brought and left in my bag.
Nice.
Like a smart guy.
Yeah.
It's called Eat Street, and we've got street food from all over the world. And it's, you know, things that you've thought of, you know, street food, like those really spicy kebabs and curries and stuff.
Right.
You know, the things you might not have thought of, like, you know, your fried Twinkie, which we here in the Midwest love.
Right.
You know, like really good pizza or even just like a great stand-up burger.
Are you a good cook now?
Now, yeah. Or my wife is the nicest lady in the world.
Your wife and baby are outside the window. You really could have let them come in.
Yeah.
And your mom is here, for God's sake, you know.
You know, she wanted to be outside because we've got a rare respite from Chicago spring.
And so she says you're a good cook, so you've actually become a good cook.
Well, she eats it, and mm-hmm. I don't know if she's hiding it in her napkin and throwing it away later, but it seems to work out.
Okay, so we talk about businesses here, and it sounds like you've got a fun club, but you've turned it into, is this your full-time job now?
No, it's not. It used to be Jesse's full-time job. We've actually all ended up getting jobs because of ManBQ. So my last job, they go, oh, tell me about a project you've self-supervised on. And I pulled out the first book, which is kind of a jerky thing. But, like, you know, it's like, hey.
Hey, I'm an author.
Yeah. Jesse works for Goose Island now you know, he got directly from us working with them on various catering gigs
right.
and stuff. John works for the Cicerone Society, which is the society that certifies people who are expert beer tasters and educators. And, yeah, so we all kind of, like,
did I buy a hot dog from you last year?
At the Sox game?
Were you at the Cell?
Yeah.
Right. You used to sell dogs at the Sox games?
Yeah. I went. So I pitched Serious Eats, a website in New York that is big on food. I said, hey, you know, if I could somehow weasel my way into selling hot dogs at a ballpark, would you let me write about it? And they're like, sure, it never happened. And then, you know, I'm a Cubs guy, but the White Sox were fantastic about it. And, you know, now my intercity hate is sadly dulled.
Right. Well, you know, it's hard, isn't it? Especially when they've got the best record in the American League.
I mean, I'll give it until the City Series, and I'm sure it'll kick back up.
The hate will return.
Yeah.
So you've got two cookbooks out now, mm-hmm. a line of clothing coming.
Yeah, we've got neat shirts like this.
Nice.
Great radio.
Are they available? It says meat, beer, rock, roll. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, these are usually ampersand,
play.
But we got a little Chicago
flag
thing.
Oh, it's like the play on
here.
The Chicago flag. I like that, yeah.
Yeah, we've got a lot of stuff. If you check out our site, manbq.com, our web store should be launching soon, but I know we have the shirts already.
Okay.
We just switched platforms. Our old website was mostly made of glue and Ukrainian code.
I think it's hilarious that were you interested in food before this started?
No, as my mom, I was the pickiest eater in the world until I was like 20 years old. I didn't start eating pasta until I was dating my wife. I was like 24.
So the phrase in business with startups is scale. Are you ready to scale? I mean, do you see this going somewhere?
Oh, we hope
bigger?
So, yeah. Yeah. I hope I'm on an endless treadmill of cookbooks here, and yeah, we'll take the catering gigs as they come along.
You hope to. What's next for you then?
Hopefully, ManBQ 3, all sausage.
Wait, really? Is that what's coming?
The proposal's out there, all sausage, all the time. No one's written Hot Dog the book quite yet.
I don't know.
I mean, he did.
I don't know if ManBQ all sausage is like sort of a catchy approach.
They pay people to think of much better titles than I
yeah,
can.
Okay,
so yeah, that's totally out of my hands.
I blew through the catering though, but you do some catering too?
A little bit. We've cooked for Goose Island. We've cooked for a few bands around town. We've cooked for Sailor Jerry, the rum, not the sailor. and we've done a lot of private stuff. It was kind of tamped down lately, but it's always a fun way to meet new people and, you know, we did one job where they wanted a 70s menu, so we did the beef jello kind of aspic.
Right,
you know,
yeah, I love that.
And people ate it. That's how you know there was drinking at that event.
I love the fact, you know, because I talk to people who are these high-tech innovators in computer technology and all of that. But sometimes you can happen into something or fall into something, and it turns out you love it and you didn't even know you loved it.
Oh, it was great. Yeah, I mean, I'm making up for lost time. I wouldn't eat ketchup on my hamburger for most of my life, and now I'm eating, you know, kimchi and pig's tongues.
I was that with mustard. No mustard for me.
Oh, love mustard.
Tell me about this. You brought some food in here, so just give me some examples of what is in the street food cookbook.
Sure, these are all from the book. Cook them in 10 minutes or less. The first here is a classic beer cheese because we're so close to Wisconsin. And Wisconsin beer cheese is like the greatest party food.
Right,
you
right.
You can just eat it with both hands, you know, if it weren't for social situations. This sandwich
and even
here,
sometimes in social situations,
right?
Yeah.
This sandwich here is from the new book, and it's playing a Cuban sandwich called a Medianoche. You like that accent?
Sure, yeah, very nice.
It's a McHenry accent.
You said you were from Florida, right?
My wife is.
Oh, okay.
But this is like a Cuban sandwich, but you replace the pork with salami. You put a nice honey mustard on it, and it's delicious. I mean,
right.
You can eat it's you know, Tampa Bay drunk food, really.
I was going to say, who would want to replace the pork in a Cuban with salami? But
oh, there's still ham in it now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And then the third thing we've got here is something that we did for the book that we were surprised that our publisher let us get away with. It's a Dorito tamale. What you do is you take, I learned this in grad school, but it's apparently a kind of a prison thing too. And you take a bag of Doritos and you crunch them up. And you take a pack of Top Ramen and you crunch it up and you mix the dry stuff together, pour the seasoning packet in there, put a cup of water in, roll it up like a tamale in a newspaper.
Really?
And voila. It affects the brain much like I assume methamphetamine does. It's pure flavor.
And now it's going toward your young daughter's college fund. Who would have thought?
Yeah. Just built on the back of Doritos
and ramen. John Carruthers, he's one of the founders of Mambiq. Nice to see you. Thanks for coming in today.
Thanks for having us.
You bet. You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thank you, Orion Samuelson. Steve Bertrand here. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. So when it comes to investing, do you try to do it in a way that's going to make the world better, or in a way that's going to make your portfolio better? Maybe there's a way to do both. Adam Strauss is in the studio, and we're going to talk about the idea of socially responsible investing. Adam, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thanks, Steve. It's great to be here.
So I see this is described as SRI, and that's socially responsible investing, but also I see sustainable responsible impact, which is the abbreviation that works.
They're all synonyms for the same concept. Impact investing, SRI investing, ESG investing, it all relates to the whole concept of taking an investing approach where you're trying to generate an attractive financial return, but you're doing it by investing in a project or in a business that has some kind of a tangible, positive environmental or social benefit.
And this goes back centuries, right? And we'll get to that first. But one of the eras where it was really impactful, I think, was when it came to South Africa in the mid-80s, right? Not going to play Sin City and all of that, where people in this country and around the world stopped or started divesting from companies that were doing business in South Africa, and it had an impact.
Yeah, that's right.
Is that what we're talking about?
It actually started a little bit before that with religious investors wanted to exclude so-called sin stocks from their portfolio. It went on to the divestment movement. And that's really, a lot of the origins of impact investing or ESG investing. But today, investors are also not just trying to avoid, you know, the worst companies,
right,
but trying to invest in companies who also actually have a product or a service or a set of business processes that have a positive social and environmental
impact.
And
so can you do that? Can you invest in companies that make the world better and still turn a nice profit? I mean, still improve your portfolio? Do you suffer if you do that?
No, I don't think you do suffer. I mean, we've been investing that way for a long period of time, and in our view, it's actually a great way of avoiding risk. By looking at environmental, social, and governance factors, it helps you to, I think, avoid companies where you have an irresponsible management team that's really short-term focused, and avoids the blow-ups that can happen and really destroy a lot of value.
So tell me that again. So companies that might be doing harm to the environment might be run by people who are less reliable?
Well, there's, let's take an example like BP, right? So BP for a long time had a poor safety record, mm-hmm. and it was really obvious to anybody who looked at their historical safety record. What occurred in the Gulf was a huge liability for the company. And there are situations like that that I think if you're looking at non-financial fundamental factors like environmental, social, and governance performance, you can not avoid everyone, but hopefully avoid more than most.
We were talking earlier on the program about the fact that millennials are more in tune to this than other age groups, and it seems to decrease as you get older. Why is that?
Well, I think, you know, millennials came of age during the financial crisis. They're suspicious of financial markets in general. And, you know, they've seen lots of examples of, short-term focus on the part of corporate CEOs. And so they're, I think, justifiably wary. You know, that said, you know, we are seeing demand even for environmental, social, and governance kinds of investments, even from some older clients at Peek & Singer, in part because they've got a shorter time horizon, and so they're more risk-averse. So anything that we can use in our toolbox to help avoid risk is going to be important.
And Adam, I didn't introduce you correctly, but you're the CEO at Peek & Singer.
That's right.
And coming up next week, I think, is this Industry for Impact or Investing for Impact conference. Tell me about that.
So the Investing for Impact conference, it happens on May 11th. It's at the St. James Hotel, and it's going to be a bunch of investors getting together to share ideas about impact investing. There'll be a number of speakers. I'll be one of them, but talking about a lot of different topics with a lot of different experiences. There's a link to information about the conference from our website at www.peekandsinger.com. And if any of your listeners are interested, I have a discount code. It's IMPACT, the word IMPACT.
Oh, sweet.
Get you in for 20% off.
Give me the website again.
www.peekandsinger.com.
Adam Strauss, thanks very much for coming by. I appreciate it. I appreciate the work you're doing, too.
Thanks, Steve.
You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN.